Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I'm so excited today to bring you my friend and creative colleague, really one of the most creative people I know on Vashon Island, Rondi Lightmark. You've probably seen her work because her amazing dog cards, they featured pithy sayings with Vashon dogs, and what was not to love about that? But that was just one of many of Rondi's creative projects. She's been going strong since the get. I know she was a teacher when she worked in Waldorf schools many years ago, Waldorf schools being one of the most creative forms of education for children. Then moving on, she became a writer and an editor and co-authored a book. More recently on Vashon, she wrote a memoir about losing her husband when she was only 48 years old. It's a marvelous journey of grief and transformation. That book, The Difference Between Seeds and Stones, came out last year, and I can't wait to talk about it, because Rondi, like a lot of us on the island, is what I call an indie creator. Sometimes we can't afford to wait for the world to roll out a red carpet for us. We have to create our own way, either as social entrepreneurs, creating companies, creating art, creating music, creating books, because we feel a personal passion to express something and share something and potentially help people. Rondi, it's a long intro, but thank you. And thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. I love that you invited me to come here, and I'm sure your listeners appreciate as much as I do your incredibly wonderful way of expressing yourself, and I admire that greatly. And as you know, I don't know how long we've been friends, but there's never been a conversation on one of the many walks that we've taken that I haven't gone home and had to send you several emails because of everything that you've sparked in me. So,
well, thank you so much. And I think one of the places that we'll start is that whole piece of being an indie publisher and putting out your own book. Because I've had a couple people contact me because they've seen my book in the bookshop, and they've wanted to know how I published. And I have told them a bit about my journey of what I call independently publishing, because I don't really like the term self-publishing. It seems too much like vanity press. I like to say it's an independent publishing where I am a publisher. I own my resource. I create my resource. I hire resources. I need to put it out into the world. And I manage the whole thing myself. You did the same. And by the way, congratulations. And for anybody who hasn't seen your book about dealing with the loss of your husband and how transformational that journey became, I invite them to go down to the bookshop. And the link to the book will be in the show notes. What was the journey of self-publishing, independent publishing like for you?
Well, if you don't mind, I'll preface that for a second. To also say, like your wonderful book, it's available in the King County Library System.
Ta-da, which is no small deal, because King County isn't really friendly to independence. So it's a huge milestone to get accepted into the library.
Yes, and we both won the Nautilus Award.
Yes.
Which is the Nautilus organization is dedicated to publishing books that make the world a better place. So that's something we've carried in our hearts as part of our journey also. So just lovely to share that as well. So the other thing that I'd like to preface is that when I lost my husband at age 48, to me, I felt extremely old and had no idea how I was going to make a life for myself after that. But I did know that the one abiding thing that I had always felt was authentic about me was my great love of writing. So that's what I set myself to do, to see if I could create a career as a writer.
Can I take a footnote and say, did you have that love since you were a child?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. When my family would have a fight, I would go upstairs and write a whole story about it afterwards. I'm a storyteller and that's been abiding. And also the love of creating word and image, which is how the greeting card company came about as well. So that dream was realized, and it's an extraordinary story that I don't feel I need to share here, but it's a great one if you want to read it in my book. And for me, the loss of my husband created the identity of myself as a writer. And I was going, my goal then was to see, okay, I'll give myself 3 years if I can possibly become a professional writer and sustain a career. And I was able to realize that. I acquired an incredible agent through a series of amazing circumstances. We got a $200,000 book contract to write a dog training book, a spiritual dog training book, which I co-authored for someone. And I did some other co-authoring jobs also. And then I came to Vashon, started the greeting card company, and that kind of, I was burnt out on the writing process and delighted to be stimulated by wonderful Vashon with its wonderful dogs and cars. So I went that route. But when I became in my late, well, I just turned 78 yesterday.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
So let's say when I was 75, 76, I thought, you know, this memoir of the journey that I took after Jim died has been half written over 30 years. And I better do it now because who knows whether otherwise it'll ever happen. So I already had a lot of material to work with. But when I spoke with my agent, who has now been a friend for 30 years, or I'd say 25 years, she said, you know, you haven't a prayer of getting this published. Number one, widow's memoirs, you know, that there's a lot of us out there now. There's got to be something else to really get it noticed. But honestly, it'll be a long, hard slog.
And I want to underscore that for people, because there's always been this, you have to go out and get an agent. And to get into traditional publishing houses, the big four that are now owned internationally, you do have to have an agent. But the sad truth is that when you're not super well known, your story, not because it's not good and not because you're not a good writer, because she knew your writing and she had advanced it in the past, but just because of the way the market works, makes it very difficult to go to a publisher and promise that you're going to bring in the $250,000 that they really want a book to bring in. And so it's not a reflection of your writing, but it is a reflection of the world today.
And I think just to then segue over to your comment about self-publishing versus indie publishing, no matter what you call it, actually, it's become huge. And whereas one used to kind of feel apologetic about self-publishing, it's not the case anymore.
No,
really isn't.
It's not. And my friend Christina Baldwin, who's a really well-known writer who started the world of journaling and has several best-selling books on writing, when it came to publishing her novel last year, it was the same thing as what happened with your agent. And Christina is well-known and she's good. And she finally said, I don't want to spend 2 more years or 3 more years bringing this book to the world. And so her book has just come out. But
yeah. Yes, yeah.
And she's a great writer, but so are you. So
yeah. Oh, thank you.
Let's go back and just, because I interrupted you. You were saying that really thousands, millions of books are coming out now.
Yes.
That are independently published.
Yes. Yes. I mean, what it really comes down to, whether you've wanted to be a writer your whole life or whether you're kind of like a literary Grandma Moses type where you all of a sudden realize after you've done everything that you committed to in your life, which in many times means family and their needs, and you finally have some space to have your own head to yourself and your own heart to yourself, for yourself, that all of a sudden you have a special voice you want to put down there on the printed page. And so that's different from, you know, saying, oh, I want to become a professional writer and I'm going to throw myself into that world. And the memoir really had such a different place in me because it was authentically me, and much of my other writing has either been, for example, to write about the climate crisis, which is not, it's a deep part of me, but it's not my story, you know, it's a story for all of us. And the book that I got the big advance for in the very beginning was for a dog trainer who had a very unusual approach. So writing for other people it's like getting a master's or a PhD degree when you do that, with a lot of psychological stress. But the memoir or the children's book, I think many women, when they get older, would love to write for children, you know, because so many stories have come out of them in raising children. It has to be, you know, something where it's got to be born, whether you're going to be made famous or not, but just because that's the most creative, the creative fire that's burning the brightest in you.
I think that's so key and challenging in a certain way, because when you were 50 and you wanted to write, you also wanted to make a living. So having a book contract and being able to write the dog book was a way of making a living. But when we get to a point where we want to write a children's book or tell our story, it's not necessarily from the point of view of wanting to make a living. We might want to cover our costs, but we're not driven to make a living. And at the same time, that question of, are you making any money at this? You know, are you covering your costs? It is always there. So I think that the kind of book that you're talking about is really soul work. You know, you have a dream, you have a North Star you're following, you know that you have to write the book. And that's the thread that you hold on to through the whole process. But that doesn't promise you that the world is going to come back out in droves to buy your book and cover all your costs and, you know, let you retire opulently or whatever else might there. How in your own mind do you walk that tightrope between wanting it to be well received, hoping that you'll someday cover your costs, and knowing that the most important thing is the soul journey you've been on and your willingness to really give your heart and mind to that journey?
Well, I went two places in my head with that, and now I have to find where the intersection is. Well, I'll just say that when I became a photographer to do the Dogs and Cars book, or I hope it's going to become a book, the Dogs and Cars Greeting Card Company, I also did a lot of other photography and loved doing that. And I spent tons of money. But there came a time, actually, when I was starting to move out of the greeting card business, and I had so much inventory and, you know, and too many cameras and too many and card spinners and also art prints and things like that. And so I thought, oh, well, this is all worth a lot because I have spent so much money on it over the years, you know. And so I advertised it and set it all up and put it out on Facebook, and hardly anybody came. And I just think, you know, I was already in my mind spending it because I knew I had a good following.
And spending it, you meant the whole inventory?
Yeah, the money that would come in.
Yeah.
People would come in and get it. But, you know, it was peanuts. And it was lovely to see people, but they weren't walking off with this huge amount of stuff that was clogging up my life. So then, like, the next day I put on Facebook that it was all free. And everybody, you know, that was supposed to show up before, now they all came. And they walked off with it, and people said wonderful things like, you know, we just moved to the island. We don't have a single piece of art on our walls, and now you've made this possible. Thank you. And so, yes, greatly diminished. Some of it, there's still inventory at the senior center. There's inventory at the Burton store. But after all of this was over, I thought, my God, so much money that you spent. And you just gave it all away. And then I thought, you know, that was the cost of learning all this wonderful stuff that I learned. And that's, you know, that was my investment in me. And I didn't really do it for money. It would have been nice, but that was my investment. And I feel like that's the same thing you have to think about with writing. You know, it cost me thousands of dollars, really, to put that book out. And I don't know that I would ever recover anything close to that. But I'm so happy. It was really worth it.
It sounds to me that we have to recalibrate what compensates us. And I say this because I struggle with the same thing. Those people who walked away with your free product were joyful. It really meant something to them. They weren't just coming to scavenge. You made their day. You created happiness in the world. And I know that your book is already having that impact on people who have felt it and have been supported in their grief journey, interested, inspired. And I've had the same where people will tell me, oh, you've changed me, or I'm thinking about things in new ways. And I just find in our culture, it's hard to put a value on that, which is in a sense even more valuable than people going and paying something for your work. And yet the bent of the culture is so in a different direction that, you know, I struggle a bit. I'm both so grateful to inspire people. And then I have to keep pushing away the dragons of, but did you sell it? Mm-hmm. You know, did you bring in the money? You know?
Different validation or something.
Yeah. But the validation of knowing that you're changing people's lives and bringing joy, viewed from the outside, sounds pretty magical.
Yes, and I think that's actually the giving it away for free. It's interesting how that works in our culture now, that they're, especially if you're on social media at all, you're always getting free offers. I think people have learned that there's so much competition out there that if you're not willing to be the helper first or the giver first, you're just not going to attract the audience that is looking for what you have to offer. So
that you, like in your shoes, you get to write a free chronicle on Substack where authors can write to a large public, not necessarily for compensation, but as a way of getting their work out into the world. So you've got your lovely writing going now on your Substack page.
Yes, well, thanks for that. As you have with your amazing, I'm going to call it, it's not a podcast.
In my bloggy type
your
writing.
Your blog, yes, blog. Yes. It's very rewarding because you find a community. So it's not just you sitting at home saying, oh, I have these things in me that I want to say, and I wouldn't somebody please validate them. But, you know, you find your community that does the same thing.
Which is another kind of reward.
Yeah.
Another kind of reward. What else can you say to encourage people who want to do the journey of independent publishing? I'm talking today with Rondi Lightmark about independent book publishing.
So we're going to say another piece of finding the community, and that is social media is something, if you're not that interested in it, you can still find places to share your story with people. For example, there are many Facebook grief groups that I have looked at, and I posted in one of them saying, because they were just full of primarily women who wanted to share that they had just lost a loved one and they were totally at sea about what to do. And for the most part, those groups attract people, women helping women, you know, but there wasn't any kind of clear voice coming through that was, for the most part, of those that I visited, that was saying, well, this is what helped me. And so I just said, listen, this happened to me 30 years ago. This is something that I put on. This happened to me 30 years ago. This is what I did. And I described the rituals and the practices that were so important to my healing. And there were over 1,200 likes and 207 comments that came in within a week saying, if I had only known this 20 years ago, I wouldn't have suffered for so long, for example. And actually, there's a link on my website if anyone wants to read that. But just to say that even though you may not find an agent or lose a ton of money and not find an audience through advertising, you can find so many communities online through social media and that are really interested in the place that you've gone. And so if you can find a way to intersect some of those conversations and find your right place, that can help validate you and then also help your I had some sales that came out of it as well.
So it's a good promotional tool, but you're also reminding me that in the world of getting information out and sharing your writing, we tend to think about books because books are kind of like the gold standard of the thing that we want to do. But in today's world, there are really a lot of other platforms. And so when somebody comes up to me and they say, you know, I think I want to write a book, and I probe a little bit, I'm also saying, is it that you want to write a book and go through that whole journey of publishing in that form? Or is it that you want to be a part of a community sharing your ideas in written form out in the world? Because there are a lot less expensive ways to begin the conversation. And then out of that conversation, I know you did it after your book was published, but out of that conversation, you also get an idea of how people are reacting to your ideas. And so your writerly life can actually grow as you put things out in these different vehicles that are around today, you know, whether it be Facebook, Medium, Substack, any of the independent platforms like that.
That's right. And I think it's growing and expanding. What's interesting about Substack, and you're on Substack also?
I'm on Substack. And just for listeners, it's a place where a lot of writers go to be able to put out their work on a regular way, sometimes for free and sometimes to paid subscribers. And sometimes there are different offers that go to different groups. But it's a very independent platform because you're not going to be, people aren't going to be swamped with Facebook ads and some of the stuff that goes with other social media platforms. So it's a really good vehicle for writers.
What people are starting to say is, where there's so much frustration with the corporate media seemingly especially during these political times, not being as open and honest and telling the whole story and the sane washing, particularly that's going on with Trump. People are starting to say, you know, there are so many people that are gravitating to places like Substack that they're beginning to, in many ways, replace these huge organizations that are so monitored mm-hmm. by outside forces that we can't begin to understand. So
it's reminding me of the huge opportunities that there are that we don't even understand yet for indie creators, because at the same time, traditional publishing is increasingly hard to break into and increasingly channeled into four main vehicles. And traditional media is hard to access and limited and being fouled up by Russian spies or whatever is going on there. There's this more horizontal plane of opportunity for people to come in and get their words out and share in more of a community-based forum that's just burgeoning. So it's kind of weird that the old hierarchical structures are getting increasingly limited, but at the same time, the opportunity to independently influence seems to just be growing. And who knows what forms are going to come out of that?
It's true. What I always have liked about your blog, you know, is that you make it multidimensional. You'll add not only a photograph, but you'll also add music sometimes. And again, that Substack has become that as well. You can really invite someone into your living room and tell them what's on your mind, but then you make it all so much more than that.
I thought we could just bookmark tips to give to people, because I think we've been talking about several of them. So let's just brainstorm for a moment, you know, what we would say to somebody who comes up and says, I want to write my book and get it out. So I'll start and see what you add. You know, one is that the traditional publishing industry is incredibly hard to break into if you're not a celebrity. You can still try. You can go for it if you want to get an agent. But know that there's so many other vehicles, and depending on how long you want to spend and how much you want to market, it might be better to go direct to one of those vehicles rather than knock on a door that is typically not very receptive.
Yes, and I would just add to that, in fact, there are publishing houses that will look at your work without an agent. Not a lot, but some of them are very reputable and are well known for taking good care of their authors.
And some of those publishing houses are now in the category that you call hybrid, which means that the publishing house will put out your book through their house. But realizing that you're not going to turn a fortune, you know, they're saying, hey, we're going to share the costs, we're going to share a little bit of the risk, and we're going to share what comes back. So you have to put out money, which was typically not true in the early days of publishing, but it seems honest in terms of what kind of return you can likely expect. And if you're interested in going that way, you can do your research, because there's some shoddy ones as well. But to find out the small houses, the independent houses, or the hybrids that will help you get your book out is another way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you can hire, for example, I hired an editor to work with me. It was a fraught relationship, I would say, and I would not hire her again. But she sure covered a lot of ground that I wasn't interested in covering, like finding where the quote, the origin of the quote was that I had in my head, you know.
Yeah, and good editors can be golden, you know, and they can work with you on the big picture of your work. They can drill into the structure of your work. They can drill down to the sentences and then the punctuation. Different kind of editors for different kinds of pieces of work. And almost all of us are going to need those editors. And what your experience taught me, at least, is that the relationship with that editor and how much they really believe in your work above and beyond whatever the relational compensation is going to be, is critical, because you want someone who really gets you and who feeds your spirit along the way.
Yes, it's great fun to share this information. There's something else that's popped into my head that I have used for my website and for my book promotion, and probably other things that aren't coming to mind right now. But it's called Fiverr. Have I mentioned that to you before?
No, but I've used Fiverr.
Yeah.
Fiverr and Upwork are both sources of relatively inexpensive help.
Why don't you say?
Yeah.
Since you've used it.
Yeah. And the thing about Fiverr or Upwork is you can, if you're clear on what you need, you can probably find it. But you're also going to have to verify that the person understands your work and has a track record, and there are ways to do that. But it's much less expensive. Yeah, much less expensive than other ways.
Yeah, it's fiverr.com.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you go on that website and take a look at everything that's offered, these are people all over the world. So I've hired someone in Switzerland. I've hired someone in Kenya. I've hired someone in Pakistan.
Amazing.
The person in Switzerland I hired to do an author promotion to exist on my Amazon page, and he did a beautiful job. So as for one example, and sometimes there, I wish I could remember the last thing I did. It was some stupid technical thing that usually I kill myself figuring out, you know, and I just kind of went, wait a minute, this will take me 2 days to get done, or I can just look on Fiverr, and found someone who did it for me overnight. So
there are ways of getting help at a reasonable cost, which is really great. The thing behind that, though, is that you are the one who has to, you hold the knowledge of what your book is really about. So, for example, on Fiverr, you can get someone to design a cover, and a great book cover is essential to your work. But in your heart, you know who's this book for, and what's the feel of the book, and if a nice stock image will do for you, great, and they can put that together, or you may need to get more guidance. As I remember, you had a whole story. You have a beautiful cover on your book, and it fits the book. And it does not look like stock art. It looks like art.
Well, it was done by the wonderful Vashon, brilliant artist, and what's the other word? Designer, Christine Dom.
Yeah, shout out to Christine. Because it was beautifully designed, and that's really important. And again, you can get help for that, but you held the reins on what you wanted, and then in the end you had to work for it, but you got what you wanted, which mm-hmm. was really good. And that's going to be true throughout the process. So in that sense, independent publishing can be more work, because you're not just giving your work over to a publisher and say, make of this as you would. You're saying, here's what I want, here's who the book is for, here's how it needs to feel. And then you can go out and buy the help that you need. I ended up buying I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of a publishing service where they didn't own my book. They didn't put it out through their publishing house, but they provided me all of the service that a publisher would provide, and I paid for it. And it was a good exchange, you know, and now I still own my book. Any other tips that we could throw out for people right now?
Well, I would also say that Amazon will help you, and you can find a ton of help on YouTube. It will help you set up your own book, you just upload it to Amazon.
Yeah.
You take the manuscript, put it in Microsoft Word, and you can pick your own font, and you can set up all the chapters, or you can get Fiverr to do it for you, and you could get Fiverr to proofread it for you, and then you upload it all by yourself, and you can learn through YouTube, as well as you can even call people on Amazon that will help you.
Mm-hmm. And though I know a lot of people, especially here on the island, have a love-hate with Amazon, and I certainly understand that, they are so the elephant, the gorilla in the room when it comes to publishing that you really can't ignore them. But Amazon doesn't have to be the whole of what you do. And one of the things that I love, I mean, I am such a fan of our Vashon Bookshop. You know, I love Nancy and her gang. They do such a job for local authors. And there are ways that you can get your book distributed outside of Amazon and use Amazon, but do it in a way that benefits independent bookshops and places like the Vashon Bookshop.
Absolutely. And I'm trying to think of the organization that you...
Bookshop.org.
Yes.
Bookshop.org is a service for any of you out there who hate Amazon but want to buy online. This is a bookshop that independent bookstore owners love because you go, you buy, you get shipped to you online. You might pay a little bit more than Amazon, but it's, you know, reasonably competitive. But the big difference is that then they give a portion of their profits to your bookshop. And so the Vashon Bookshop uses bookshop.org, and it's a great relationship. They're, you know, thumbs up about it. And I recommend it to people who don't want to do Amazon, do want to support independent bookshops, and yay, bookshop.org.
Since you have a better memory than I do at the moment,
Ingram Spark.
Yes, Ingram Spark, yeah. Ingram Spark is the publishing company that bookstores order from. Mm-hmm. So if you go walk into a bookstore and you say, hey, you know, I've just written this book, had it self-published, here it is, will you carry it? They right away say, well, is it on Ingram Spark? Mm-hmm. And if it isn't, they can't carry it.
They will not go to Amazon.
Yeah.
They will not order from Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So pretty much for any author I know, I recommend be published and distributed through Ingram Spark and through Amazon, because that will open the door to bookshop.org and bookshops and stuff. What we're talking about, though, just to underscore for people, is print on demand. Because for most of us, unless we're going to get up into the thousands, in which case the scenarios would change, you're going to pay more to have your book published one at a time by this print on demand. Your reader isn't going to know the difference. And you're not going to need to keep 1,000 books in your basement or with it paying a distributor every month to hold them and put them out the way you used to when you did big runs of books. So I know they're small, you know, they're small runs. And one of my friends who I'm going to interview soon, Annie Brulé, has a firm that does distribute small indie books and small runs. But for the most part, most of us are going to do print on demand. It's just so much easier. We won't make as much, but we don't carry the risk of those 1,000 books in your basement.
Yeah. Which you can then give away.
Which you can then give away. Oh my God, even giving it away is work, you know.
It's true.
I've had people, you know, say, here, take four of these beautiful tabletop coffee table books that, you know, which I knew were like $60 a piece because he had so many boxes.
Yeah.
He couldn't even get rid of them.
Yeah.
So how about a few more? Anything else?
Actually going to bring up the issue of being in a writing group.
Ah, yeah.
You know, and I'm sure there are writing groups on the island. I just have never been in one.
Several, and Jeannie Okamoto has a memoir writing group that came up out with its own book, you know, with selected writings with members of the group, which is lovely if you have that kind of support behind you.
Right.
I like writing groups. The problem that I had was that in a writing group, I could share 3-4 pages at a time. But to really put out a book, you have to know what the flow of those 150 pages is going to be like. And that's a little harder in that kind of group presentation. At least it was for me. So
yeah.
So do you have any tips or ideas to help independents on that big step of promoting your work?
My very first time that I appeared in print other than in a newspaper column was an anthology, and it consisted of the voices of women who had lost their husbands. And, you know, they were like three, four-page essays for the most part. And so that's a wonderful thing. If you are in a writer's group, for example, where you're pursuing a certain theme together, why not put out a whole book together? And that's a great first step. You know, then you can just kind of heave a sigh of relief and say, well, I've been published. And is the hunger still there? Well, now you can go to the next level because you've learned so much. And it's great if you've done it with a group of friends because you've learned together and shared the work.
And that's a great suggestion. I like it on many levels. You know, the idea of doing it with support and doing it in a collective can make it potentially easier. And also it gets you writing, and it gets you writing to completion where you share it with the world. Because without wanting to put anybody down for having a creative impulse, because that's part of what my work in the world is to fan those sparks. When someone comes and says, I want to write a book, I'm always wanting to ask first, are you writing? Are you writing? Because to go from zero to book is a big haul. And it's a lot easier to build momentum by writing shorter pieces, by creating a blog, by going out on Substack, going out in an anthology, writing an article. And all those things are going to teach you a lot about writing and get your momentum going. So then a book becomes a natural stage. But to go zero to book is a really big jump. And for that reason, I think some of those aspirations remain pipe dreams. You hear them over and over and over, I'm going to do my book, and you kind of go, don't talk to me about book, just go write.
It's really hard to start. It's really hard.
It's hard to start at anything. Yeah. As a painter, the blank canvas is hard. As a book writer. But, you know, we're not even asking you to be good. Just write gibberish for 30 days, you know, for 10 minutes a day. And by the end of 30 days, something is going to come out that you might even like, you know?
I recently had a visit from a dear old friend from the East Coast who is now retired. And he said that he was all excited because now he had the time to write a cookbook because he'd been a baker all his life.
Yeah.
And so he gave me this very complicated description of what he wanted to create. And he said, no, I'm not going to self-publish. I'm going to sell it to a big publisher. And so I gave him the story about, you know, that doesn't happen anymore unless you've got a huge audience. But the thing is, if you're going to go out and compete in a cookbook genre, for example, you have to know what else is out there. Otherwise, you'll sweat blood and tears, and then you'll bring your book out and then look around and somebody else has already done the same thing. And maybe they had more money and maybe they had a bigger audience or whatever. And talk about getting your balloon punctured. So whenever anyone writes a proposal to, let's say, a big publishing company, one of the first things that you have to do is you have to do a book comparison. You have to know what else is out there. And so whenever anyone approaches me about, you know, reading a manuscript or listening to some of their ideas, you know, I say the same thing to them. If you feel like you've got something unique, and very often this is not in the realm of fiction, it's in the realm of nonfiction. If you feel like you've got a unique contribution to make in this area, you need to know the area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's totally key. I mean, I was talking to someone recently who was acting as if there were, you know, the book, because it really comes from his heart and soul, is so unique that there's nothing out quite like it. And I'm going, ooh, your story will be unique because it's uniquely yours, but it's got to be situated in a landscape where people can find it. And in that landscape are competitors and books that are comparable. And Amazon is going to need that because they're going to say, how do I place you? Do we place you, Rondi, with grief, or do we place you with midlife, you know, transformation? Or how do we find you? And if you know that landscape and you know what's out there and you know what you're most similar to, then you can sort of position yourself at the side of that. And it's hugely important in all sorts of ways. And for the person who says, like you said, nothing's like this, you go, nothing's like you. But you got to find something that is a little bit like this to orient on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really, really important, really important reminder. And at the same time, realize, like you did, you know, there are a lot of widows who've written stories about their grief. They haven't written yours. They haven't given the unique piece that you gave to the world. So it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. It just means you need to know the landscape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, another thing that I recently found out, and again, it depends on how universal your experience is. Like, everybody goes through grief. So that in terms of the potential of finding an audience for the way you particularly handled your situation, it's a lot bigger than someone who devoted their life to baking wedding cakes, for example. I'm not talking about him. I'm just trying to, you know, make the contrast.
I'm talking today with Rondi Lightmark about independent book publishing. My overarching feel that is you do what you do, do the pieces that speak most to you and connect you with an audience, and you can't do it all.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no magic bullet. It's, you know, hard work. But fortunately, for example, I love speaking. So being on podcasts is just like cake to me. But there are other parts of the promotional picture that I'm not going to spend a lot of time on because they're less like me. And I only have a certain amount of time. And that's a difficult compromise because people are always telling you how to promote your book and how much time. And you have to be on this social media these many hours every week consistently. Da, 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 da. And at a certain point, you just have to say, yeah, but I have other things I want to do and other writing to do. And so I want to do my book justice. But I want to have a life. I have to keep reminding myself, and my husband Steve reminds me as well. It's like, can we make it fun? Can you have fun doing this? You know, like I'm terrified to do videos. It's not my work, but I have an assistant. She'll come over, and if it's with her and I can play, yeah, I can do a short video. And so that's my tiny baby step that it is fun. But left alone, doing some of the stuff on my own wouldn't be fun. So I'm trying to find ways to feel like promotion can carry the same creative spark that brought my book to life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what can I do to make marketing fun? What can I do that will fit me as I promote the book? Because in the end, that's really kind of, you know, it's we're not doing this like this independent business, money-making commodity. We're doing it because it's a piece of ourselves and because writing has brought us out to the world in a new way, has changed who we are. And so the marketing and the promotion needs to do the same thing, I think.
Yeah, that's well said. It's interesting. You know, I photographed over 100 I created over 100 different dog cards when I was doing the dogs and cars, like Lightmark Press. And I never get tired of looking at those doggy faces, ever. You know, I might be a little unhappy about the captions. Some of them I want to be different, but there's the spirit of it lives in every single card. And I get charged with that.
Yeah.
In terms of my memoir, if I am away from it, there's a part of me that goes, you know, I cleaned that out of my life. And so I don't necessarily need to go back to it. But on the other hand, it is still a living being. And it's like a child that was birthed. And if I go and read a page of it, I'll sometimes surprise myself, you know, because of wherever I was when I wrote it in myself, you know, I'm and so I think that that very much, I'm speaking to the thing of promoting. You know, if it's not still alive in you, then the promoting doesn't have the same psychic energy, if you want to put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the passion still has to be there for that message.
Yeah, and it's the difference between having a book, like you take it from the library and then you turn it back and it's kind of dead at that point, and a creation that's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you don't tend it very much, when you're there, you honor its aliveness. You honor that it has its own trajectory. It's almost like its own voice.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go back to my final, you know, maybe mantra for this session is to be able to ask yourself, does this bring me joy? Does whatever I'm doing with it, if it's marketing or editing or whatever, how can I make this part of my creative work? How can I find joy in it? Because if I find that joy, then I'll keep going. Then I'll forget how much I've paid and I won't worry about the stats. I will just do the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And I think that's kind of how, as an independent, we live our creative lives, you know, one step at a time, but trying to make sure that it's bringing our hearts forward at the same time. So I think I'll stop there, because not because I've finished the conversation, because I could go on and we could talk about your social entrepreneurship, what you're doing with the environment, your new wave of writing, and so many of your interests, because you are constantly expanding. But I think I'll hold, because this has been such a rich chapter.
This was great fun.
Yeah.
It's always fun with you.
I ditto that. Thank you. Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.